right, good morning. Really surprised to see this many people at the last day this early. My name is Yuki Kato, and I am an uptown part of Tulane University, and in Department of Sociology, my first time at the APHA, so APHA, and so forgive me if I'm not really communicating as well. This is a part of the research that I had been conducting in New Orleans to really understand the rise of alternative food movement in the city post-Hurricane Katrina. And this was, this comes out of an experimental project that my colleague and I, and I'd like to give a quick shout out to my colleague, Laura McKinney, who is not listed here, who really was helpful in making me complete this project, and a quick disclosure that I was told that I have to put on the slide. I don't think I need to tell folks in this room what food desert is, I'm assuming. If you don't know what the term is, raise your hand right now and it seems you're okay. All right, and again, fast food jungle, it's just, there are a lot of terminology out there to describe food access or disparity in food access. And a lot of times these concepts are really geographically or spatially constructed. So these are publications in geography journals that are really trying to capture, you know, who is experiencing food insecurity or lack of food access, and really trying to map it, meaning that they're really thinking of this as sort of space-based inequality. And so that's one of the things that I'm trying to engage with, to see, is it really about spatial issues in terms of where you live in relation to where the food market, you know, food outlet is, or is it something else? At the same time, there's been, again, nationally, there's been a rise of alternative food movement, evidenced by the expansion of food, farmers market, or CSA, also urban agriculture in many cities, that are taking on this sort of a food justice rhetoric in a way to use these activities as a way to address social equality, social inequality, inequity of food access. But there is a persistent question in those movement about the lack of participation and engagement from the poor and minority community. And the question is, why are they not engaging as much as perhaps white and middle class activists or practitioners or supporters of these movements? And there are several possible factors that could go into it. It could be that they don't have resources, economic resources. Anybody participating in CSA here? Okay. So again, you have to have a few hundred dollars at least at the beginning of the season to be able to participate in that, and a lot of the poor families just cannot simply afford it. It could be perhaps, again, going down to the spatial and social factors. Farmers market. You might not be able to take off Tuesday morning to go to the market. That's not necessarily accessible to everyone. Culture factor is another thing that's been sort of discussed. Is it that they just aren't really familiar with the idea of cooking fresh produce or the type of food that comes in CSA box? Maybe that's just too foreign for them to, you know, to enjoy. And ultimately, the question is sort of, is this individual factor, structure factor, or how do they sort of interact between the two? In this study, in this presentation, what I focus on is what we identified as a result of, in a process of engaging in this semi-experimental study through an alternative food market in New Orleans. And we didn't really anticipate to find these. It's just one of those things that we kind of came across in the process of running the program. And we were trying to kind of challenge this idea that tends to be much more static in identifying food access and food desert, that to sort of argue that food access has to be understood in a sort of a socially contextual and dynamic way. So, to give you a rundown of the study, this was conducted at Holy Grove Market and Farm, which is about, 10 miles from here. It was established post-Katrina in 2008 with an intention of bringing locally grown produce to a neighborhood in red, to the area that would have qualified as food desert. Now, speaking of change, there's been some major changes in that area. Since our study has been conducted, there is now a Save-A-Lot that's in the corner, right outside of, well, actually within, technically, depending on who you ask, is in the neighborhood, and also a Costco opened up just down the street from this. And so there's been changes in terms of whether this neighborhood qualifies as a food desert or not. But that, we'll get to that. This is a predominant African-American neighborhood. This was from 2013 information. Relatively small neighborhood. And as you see in a third row there, it's a pretty stable neighborhood in terms of number of people who have been living in the neighborhood for many years as owners, although there has been decline in population since Katrina. And again, I would consider this as a poor to working class neighborhood in based on their average household income. The market is a combination of farmers market and CSA. And so if you go into the market, you can buy what's called the produce box for $25 that comes with sort of a preset selection of produce for the week, and that's, like I said, $25, or you can buy items a la carte. One difference between this market and CSA is that you don't have to have a membership, you don't have to prepay. So you can just show up on a day that you feel like purchasing, and then you can just buy produce. So that is, you know, was intentionally designed so that people from the neighborhood who don't have $600 in the summer to pay upfront. The market has done really well since 2008, started with one day a week, and now it's open 7 days a week. They gradually sort of expanded their business hours, so, and it's become a very popular destination for a lot of the foodies in the city. One thing they have been really struggling to do, though, is to attract the very people who live in the neighborhood to come to this market. And so at that point, we partner with this market to see what are those factors, which of those factors really are hindering them from utilizing this market. And so this is the design of the study where we recruited 30 residents who weren't at the time utilizing the market. Maybe they have been there once or twice, but they weren't the regular customers there. And we randomly assigned them to two groups. And these were every other week, so over the course of 3 months. For the first 4 weeks, they received either the produce book delivered to their home, and we were trying to see if it's because they don't have time to go or they don't have transportation means to get to the market, because at the time the market was only open 3 days a week. And or they either received the $25 worth of voucher that they can then go to the market to redeem, and we wanted to see what would they buy. Is it because, you know, what comes in a CSA box is not really what they like to eat? And so we wanted to see what they would actually spend their money on. And once they completed the first 4 weeks and completed all the surveys, we then gave them option to see which one of these actually worked better with their needs. So again, that's an example of the vouchers that we gave, and also we put their names so that it's not really kind of passed on to somebody else in the neighborhood. And that's the average amount of food that comes in that $25 box. We also included storing and using tips for some of the items, and also a recipe just to see. And then we asked them in a weekly follow-up survey, like, did you use them? Was it useful? Just to kind of get to that sort of a cultural capital item. And we also included the information about what came in the box. Again, demographically, the average age was over 60, and so it was primarily seniors from the neighborhood, mostly women. And we really try hard to recruit younger people, particularly people with younger children, and we had a very difficult time recruiting them and retaining them in a study. But as you see, a large number of them have been living in New Orleans and in this neighborhood for many years, and most of them live within a mile to the market, so they live pretty close to the market. They spend about $60 weekly on grocery, and out of that, about $23 goes to the produce. So again, us providing $25 voucher or $25 worth of produce, we thought was a good match to their needs. And again, just to kind of give you an idea of how many years these participants have been living in this neighborhood, many of them have been there for over a decade, which becomes important. So from this point on, our actual findings regarding the experimental study has been published in Agriculture and Human Values, so I'm more than happy to share that findings in Q&A, maybe if you're interested in that. But today's presentation focuses on what we identify in the process of running this program. So one of the first things that we noticed about this neighborhood in terms of the community context was this fragmented nature of their social ties. The first time that we noticed this was at the information session that we organized for some of the residents who were interested in participating. We had this kind of a evening hour meet and greet to explain what the study was about, gather some consent form as well as a demographic survey. A lot of the residents recognized each other, but they were talking to each other as if they'd never met before, which we thought was odd. We didn't really think much of it until we realized how many years some of these people have been living in the neighborhood. In the process of recruiting, we used a combination of snowball sampling and also having some of the advertisement in neighborhood newsletters. And every time somebody called us to say we were interested, we said, all right, well, that's great. We'll just take your name down. And then could you just pass that information on to people that you know in the neighborhood who might also be interested? And we just were trying to see, you know, how many sort of degree of separation we could just extend it to. And we specifically asked them to recommend refer us to people who were younger families or people with young children. And we really had a difficult time identifying that. And so that was one of the first hint that we actually got about sort of how fragmented the social connections were across the residents in the neighborhood. Along with that, we also identified the strong indications of generational divide in the community. Sorry. So as I said, we had a very difficult time recruiting younger families. We had four women under the age of 35 with younger children, and all but one basically stopped participating after the first 3 weeks. We tried whatever we could to get them back on. We called them multiple times. We even sent them around holiday time, Christmas card with an extra voucher with no strings attached. Just go and use it. Just if you wanna just kind of participate. We just wanna know what happened. Right? Can you just write on the back why you stopped coming? None of those was redeemed. And so we were trying to scratch our head trying to figure this out, and at the end of the study, we decided to just pose this back to the residents who were still participating in the study. Well, you know, what happened? I'm sorry, this is the 07 divide. Keep going. And so this was the response that we got from mostly senior participants. And this was troubling to us because, for one, it seems that they really weren't sympathetic towards younger families in the community. And also, this was ironically very resembling to some of the sort of a blame in the victim narrative that goes on in alternative food and movement about why some of the poor people are not participating. Oh, because they don't know or they don't care. If they care, they would. And so there were, but again, only one person said, well, maybe they don't have time to cook, which was really kind of troubling to us about how little interaction there might exist between older folks in the neighborhood and younger family. The other divide was digital divide. Again, these are older people with very little familiarity with things like internet. Some of them had cell phone, but that was the extent of sort of modern communication technology that they used. One thing that really we noticed was first Saturday of 2013, apparently everybody was still on their New Year's resolution, decided to eat healthy, and so they flocked to the market. And by the end of the day, their entire inventory was just wiped out. And so they sent out this email to everybody who was on the listserv, to say, look, we don't have anything, just don't bother coming. We're just going to start over next week. We had a voucher that was expiring on Monday. A lot of the residents decided to just go on Sunday because they didn't get this email. And we got this frantic call from people on Monday saying, okay, market's not going to open until Thursday. What are we going to do? And so we immediately reissued voucher with new due date. But again, this is another thing that market was heavily relying on social media and other ways to market to people who were coming to the neighborhood, to the market, but people who lived right next door really sometimes weren't aware of what was going on here. So that was another issue there. Infrastructure failure, and with this, we're talking about U.S. Postal Service. So initially, we decided to use mail, U.S. mail, as a way to communicate with the residents. So we would just send out the survey with a return envelope with a stamp on it. Easy. And really, the market is about 5 miles north of the campus. It just cannot be more simple than that. Again, about 3 weeks into the study, we realized that about a quarter or a third of the mail that we're sending out or the residents claim that they have sent back to us are not showing up anywhere. And after multiple attempts of, you know, basically showing complaints to the office, at some point somebody said, yeah, we've had a lot of temp workers in that neighborhood. I haven't had an issue with mail in my neighborhood. And so, again, at the end of the study, we posed this to the residents. Well, is this a problem in your neighborhood? And I apologize that there's actually a bit of a confusion there. So at the top, it says persistent issues and not an issue. Among the people who said it is a persistent issue, actually the 20% said it used to be an issue. So I meant to fix that, and I just didn't get around to it. So again, there's a sort of a lack of understanding about how pervasive this issue might be. Some people think that this is an issue for them. Other people think that it's not an issue, but it's not really recognized as a community problem. And finally, really quickly, there's also potential that that some of this might be geographically could be explained geographically. So the market is located at the edge of the neighborhood on a one-way street that goes into the neighborhood. And so if you live in the neighborhood, you have to go out of the neighborhood and come back in for you to actually pass by this market. And also the park across the street has been historically kind of a segregated park. The ballpark, so the black folks in the neighborhood were not allowed to play there for a long time, which made that part of the neighborhood very sort of inaccessible culturally for people in the neighborhood, socially as well. Also, as you see, there are some major arteries that cut across the neighborhood, which might explain why some of the people who look like they live across the street really may have never crossed paths because you don't walk past each other's house. So in conclusion, some of the things that we identified inform, well, at least challenge sort of the idea that food access is solely based on your proximity to food market. There are other things that's happening in the community that seem to affect other area of life that would then obviously feed into how you access food, or do you feel this as a community issue, or who in the food desert are most likely to be vulnerable in terms of food access. And so that's sort of where I would end. Thank you so much.